Hello, this is Michael Hayes with The Hiring Confessional. Today's episode, we're going to be talking with a good guest, and which I'll introduce pretty soon. Some of the things I usually like to start off with is some things I've seen with people that are applying for jobs and things that they ask that you probably shouldn't ask. So one of these is a sales position that starts off at 85 grand. Good money. And it has a commission structure. So your probably first year is 100, and then onward you can do probably 125, and it's uncapped. So they're not going to go, oh, you're making too much money. Well, you know, they might change their mind. But a young person, probably just got out of school, they asked me a question on LinkedIn and said, is this an 8-to-5 job? Well, this isn't a time clock job. When you're in sales, it's kind of an open season on what the hours are. And a lot of times at night, people are spending time going to networking events, et cetera. So don't think of jobs as, hey, do they have a limit unless you want to go work at Wendy's or things like that. So that's just a good tip for you. Another one is I get bombed with stuff about AI every day. I'll do your interviewing, I'll hire your people, blah, blah, blah. All these services do is scan LinkedIn and other job boards, trying to get names. They use a couple algorithms that they use to advertise to you, et cetera. But if you're not getting eventually an in-person interview, that's probably not a company you want to work for. Because, by the way, resumes are pretty much a commercial for your career. They're not solid. They can be made up, stuff can be put in there, fake references, all that other stuff. So that can't see over that. So what you need to do is concentrate on doing company interviews at places, which is usually below 100 employees, they do that. And the blue collar positions are totally out, which is one of the things that I do a lot of. So you're not going to find a mechanic on Instagram all day, usually, probably not unless they're very young. But all the experienced people, they probably don't even know how to use Instagram. And on the final topic is you really need to think about before you apply for these jobs, change your resume, whatever, but don't send resumes that don't have the last 5 years of your job history. I get this all the time, and it gets annoying. Do these simple things, and you can help find a job for yourself. Now, if you're a hiring manager, and you're looking for a cost-effective way to look for people, Momentum Hiring Solutions, my company, we work on an hourly basis, and we don't have fees at the end. So give us a call if you have interest in looking for a different way to hire. Now, today's guest is Mary Foote, and I'm going to let you tell us your title because I got confused in my head right now, and so I don't want to say it wrong. So okay. Give us what your title is.
So thank you for having me. I'm Mary Foote. I'm the director of the state's Office of Economic Opportunity.
That's great. Now, how did you get into that?
Well, I've been in economic and workforce development for about 15 years, and prior to this, I was doing public finance, was doing workforce development before that, and this is a political appointed position, so the governor appointed me.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
And we met a long time ago from a mutual friend, and it's interesting because you were in the pipeline business, which mm-hmm. was the website mm-hmm. that we were using mm-hmm. at St. Joseph the Worker. What is the scope of your job? What's your responsibility?
Well, the scope of the agency is probably the best way to put it. And then, you know, I oversee those functions. So the Office of Economic Opportunity, we're essentially the workforce development strategy and evaluation agency for the state, which means we oversee the policies for all of the federal workforce dollars that the state receives, which are what are called WIOA, Workforce Investment Opportunity Act dollars, which are in the millions of dollars. We get those. We also oversee compliance for the local area workforce boards that exist across the state that help job seekers respond to layoff events, help them understand what benefits might be available to them. And then we do the evaluation portion of it as well. So we're looking at how the labor economy is actually doing. What are the jobs numbers? What is the labor force participation? We evaluate things like potential future impacts on the workforce, like AI, which you just talked about. And so really our job is to think about where is the labor market now, where is it forecasting, and how are we using our dollars, resources, and thought leadership to guide the state's workforce strategy.
Now, if I'm some company out there in Arizona, what would I call you for? What would I work on with you?
We work with a lot of companies through the what's called the Workforce Arizona Council. So in every state, governors are required to have a council that is industry majority led to help serve the strategy and evaluation of the state's workforce. So for me, working with companies directly is primarily from a strategic standpoint, understanding what their needs are, and helping them inform how we spend our dollars and how we evaluate our progress and what we need to do in the future.
Do you think your office is underutilized? Because I don't know a lot of people that know about it.
Yeah, our office has only been around for, in the history of government, it's pretty young. So Office of Economic Opportunity has been around for 10 years. It was created by former Governor Ducey. And I think the idea was that we needed to have data and strategy for workforce standalone within an agency. We also house the state demographer. So I would say where we're most utilized is, it's really a lot of nerds, right? Like we're a lot of people that are looking at data, analyzing data. Yes. We are definitely the agency that people go to understand information and help formulate workforce strategies. So we're not dealing with the public in the same way that a Department of Economic Security or Child Services might be dealing with the public in different ways. We're much more dealing with policymakers, electeds, and then people who are on the ground doing workforce development.
I think a good subject to start off with is the AI stuff. I mean, I've shared my opinions on, I think it's being really oversold. And I think it's like, but the problem is the toothpaste is out of the tube. I was on my vacation and we sat with a older couple and somebody brought up AI, and I kind of made a comment, and the dude went on a 5-minute rant like it was the devil's sword. It was going to come wipe out the world like the Terminator and things like that. What's your opinion on the status of AI right now?
Well, working in a data agency, I'm really focused on the data of artificial intelligence and its impacts on the workforce. And what we are hearing is not something that we are currently seeing, right? So I think you hear a lot about how AI is going to replace jobs, it's going to take over entire industries. We're just not seeing that. So we look at artificial intelligence from three different lenses. One is the theoretical exposure of AI on an occupation. So you'll see, places like Anthropic or OpenAI or Google, they may have lists of these are the occupations that have the greatest AI exposure. So we'll look at the theoretical exposure of an occupation. We will also look at actual labor market information. So we're going to try to understand what has the data shown us since the introduction of these large language models? What are the occupations that have been affected? And what we're seeing is that there isn't growth in the high exposure occupations. They're kind of flat, but we're not seeing nosedives, right? We're not seeing nobody hiring for them anymore. So I think the actual effects to date are a little bit overblown. And then the last thing we look at is the adaptability. So, you know, different jobs may have the same exposure to AI, but they're not going to have the same effects on the individual. Working for the government, you know, we're very concerned or thoughtful about government resources, how government resources are used. So somebody who's a software developer who's 27 years old may have high AI exposure because they're a coder and AI has been able to replicate many of the tasks that they do within their job. But that 27-year-old is young, which means they have a longer runway to change their job. They also typically have more resources, right? So we certainly want them to succeed and do well and want to provide resources if they need help shifting their, you know, future career. But we're really concerned about the people who may end up on government assistance at some point. And how do we prevent that? So we're looking at maybe a 55-year-old administrative assistant who's back office doing, you know, HR benefits calls, right? You know, what are your benefits? What's happening? We're seeing, you know, maybe some of those tasks replaced. And we want to make sure that that person has the tools and the resources to understand where their current skills are and how they may transition to something that has a similar skill set but doesn't have that same level of AI exposure.
What do you think if I'm a, which I'm sure there's a lot of high school students or early college, whether you're in one of the two-year colleges or four-year college, there's plenty of opportunities for that here, and you just don't know what to do. I mean, what do you think is a kind of a path or people should be preparing for this? What would you suggest?
I think people should really understand where their interests are. I think you're always going to do well in something that serves kind of your, where your life view matches your work view. I think when those are able to work together, you're going to have more success. In terms of where is the future pointing, career services within colleges are a great place to be. What we're seeing from an industry perspective is certainly advanced manufacturing, right? Certainly the skilled trades are doing very well. I would really call out healthcare. You know, across the country, we're continuing to see job growth, but the story that we're not really talking about is the majority of all of that job growth in Arizona, across the U.S., more than half of job growth is in healthcare. So that is something people should really consider. The demographics of Arizona, where about 20% of our population is 65 or older, that's only going to increase. That is also demographics across the country. We are getting older. People are having fewer children, right? And so that is going to create an increase in demand for healthcare services. That is a very good place to be over the next 10, 20, 30 years.
And that's not a, you really can't AI out of that because I can't come in and change your bedpan with an AI program.
Yeah, I think there's a spectrum of jobs available in healthcare. AI is going to have impacts on every industry sector. I think the thing I try to remind people is that AI replaces tasks, it doesn't replace people. So we have been through major shifts in the workforce before. The dot-com boom, NAFTA, right, where we saw a lot of manufacturing jobs move to other countries, and now AI. And I think ultimately what we see across all of these major interventions that happen within workforce is a rise in productivity. And I think we'll see that with AI as well.
I have a feeling because I'm 64, so I'm an old part. But I have friends that I know that have just resisted working with it at all. And I tell them, I go, it's actually a better tool if you're older because you know more. And I call out Claude all the time for stuff that it says that's wrong and admits it's wrong. Mm-hmm. But lots of people that don't know, they just take the thing as gospel. And there's no checking. And you get that in a classroom situation, too. Like, you know, something comes through and they'll say it. And I go, well, have you read the newspaper? See, that's what I used to read. But they're not looking for types of information that, you know, substantiates any of that, and they don't read enough. Mm-hmm. Do you find that the same way with some people?
You know, I don't work as much with the job seekers themselves, right. But I will, you know, we certainly talk to employers and we understand the mismatch between skills that employers are seeking and skills that the labor force has. I think critical thinking is a very important skill, regardless of whatever industry you're going to. You need to be thoughtful. I will also say the number one thing I tell people is that we need greater soft skills, right? Everyone talks about soft skills. Can you make eye contact? Can you hold a conversation? Do you have basic emotional intelligence?
And you're not on your phone.
Yeah, I think those things are very important. I think the way that we work toward getting people those skills are introducing people to work environments at an earlier age. More frequently, we have seen that young people kind of, they don't have high school jobs. They don't have jobs in college. We're really missing out. People need to have exposure to workforce. They need to have exposure to feedback. They need to help develop those soft skills in a work environment. And so we're very big proponents of how do we get people work-based experiences at an earlier age to help develop all of those skills.
Well, you've been in my class at GCU before, and I've always had this theory, and after doing it for long enough, you start to see the pattern, because I always tell people, I'm not reading something about this, I'm like in there. Mm-hmm. So it's that really helps my recruiting, but I've noticed that the females are miles ahead of the males. I don't know why that is, but they're always the ones that want to do something more challenging. They're always, you know, coming up after class or, oh, can we get a coffee? Because they want to talk about something or, hey, can you help me out? Almost never from the guys. Is that, notice they're the ones that are a lot more enthusiastic.
Yeah, the numbers bear that out. Over the last several years, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but over the last several years, women have outperformed men in the workplace significantly. I can't speak to kind of the behavioral, cultural aspects of what drives that, but we are absolutely seeing that in the numbers. So one of our analysts who oversees all of our AI research, you know, he talks about kind of what he calls yappers, like the people who talk.
That's me.
That's you, that's me, we're yappers. And he always says in the AI economy, the yappers are going to do just fine. So I think people who have social skills, who feel comfortable with that interaction, are going to do better. Certainly, we're seeing a rise in the skilled trades, which tends to typically skew more male, although we are seeing a lot more women go into those areas. Also, I think we're just seeing, because of the rise in healthcare careers, which women go into much more in much more significant numbers than men, women have just been outperforming men in job achievement and getting jobs. I think one of the things that we could be helpful for men is giving them a better entree into the healthcare workforce. Men need to be more comfortable being nurses, being in direct care positions, to help balance the gender within that industry sector, but also because that is where the jobs are. So I think that's something that could be helpful.
Yeah, it's interesting because even I have students that come in that are, because, you know, when you're doing a networking class, there's a lot of speaking. And, you know, when I tell them that the first day, they're like shocked, like we're going to read this out of a book, and we're not.
Yeah.
So they can't even barely hold a conversation. But by the end of the semester, I find out who's that way, and then I keep pushing them. And then they get really decent by the time they leave. And then once you give them that they know they can do it, they feel, you know, more confident. And I think that's the fun part of working with the younger students, because they're more apt to do that rather than, you know, older folks aren't doing that.
Yeah, and I think those skills are going to be really important as we look at the future of junior positions within a company. You know, the unemployment rate is higher for those coming out of college. And some people have thought that that's because AI tasks are replicating a lot of those junior positions, But there was a recent report by the London School of Economics that actually shows it's much more closely aligned because of remote work. So a lot of the junior positions have been remote, and what they have found is that senior level people don't want to take the time to spend with remote workers. It is much more difficult to train them, to spend time with them, or the feeling of what that training experience is seems more burdensome to senior people than it would if a younger person came up and came over to your desk and said, hey, I'm actually kind of struggling with this task right now. Can you give me some direction? So I think people who are the yappers, right, the people who are more comfortable with social interaction are going to feel more comfortable asking for help, whether it be an in-person or remote job, and may also just have a better success rate.
And the other thing is, I think people that do a lot of speaking and get good at it, it ain't going to make any difference what their GPA is.
Yeah, I think, again, the people who have the ability to have social interaction, to have conversations, and in a remote work environment also feel comfortable asking for help in a way that is appropriate, are going to do better, and you're going to have to be able to have those skills to succeed.
I also noticed, because you brought up the thing about the birth rate, and I have a theory on that. You know, I have a theory on everything. Half of them are right, the other half are crazy. But this one, I noticed, because if you have women that are 20, 22 years old, but they want to get a career, mm-hmm. they're holding off having kids. They might wait till 30.
Right.
And they're, because they want to get their own deal and they want to establish mm-hmm. their own identity, and then maybe they'll settle down. And I think that has a big, telltale sign of lower birth rate. That's just a theory I have.
Well, as a childless woman, I mean, my experience is, I think there are a couple of different reasons. I think certainly you want to establish yourself, have a career. At least that was my experience, right? And I think also growing up, I think a lot of young women grew up in a culture that totally flipped in terms of the messaging. It became very female focused. Girls can do anything. Girls can rule the world, right? So I think we had a lot of that messaging, which really enforced the fact that I need to stand on my own two feet, make my own money. And then obviously biology just does what it does regardless of where the cultural norms are. The other thing that is really an issue, and, you know, our office and our governor invests a lot of money and support into this. So, for example, we give money to registered apprenticeship programs, construction programs, and we have had a lot of women who go into those programs. But we're not just funding the training itself or the work boots or whatever it is that goes along with that. Everybody who has a job comes from somewhere, which is their housing. They have to find a way to get there, which is transportation. And someone needs to help take care of their family while they're earning a paycheck, which is childcare. So we invest a lot of our resources, not just in training, but also in what we call like the wraparound services. I think if you talk to any young people with children, their childcare is as much as their mortgage. So, you know, from my perspective, you can create investment accounts for young children. You can pay people to have kids. But unless you're actually investing in people being able to take care of their families while they work, that is a tough incentive. And, you know, that was the conversation my husband and I had, which was that who's going to watch our child while we're both working? Because I have a career, you have a career. And what is this cost? And can we afford that? And I don't know that we want to spend that much money on something.
Well, that is, because you're right. Somebody can just work for the childcare, which is kind of weird, because I can just stay home.
Right, right.
Or I got to do something. That's big. Those are great candidates for remote work. And I always tell people, the danger about remote work is nobody really sees you. So you got to be, you have to be somebody that can hold a conversation and things like that. And if they offer up, you know, 3 days a week in the office, do it, because you got to be seen. Mm-hmm. Because when the HR person puts a riff list together, I'm going to go, oh, I don't even know who this is. Oh, I don't even know who this is. Oh, I know her. Why is she on the riff list? And that's how you get moved out. So I think the total avoidance or of going to the office is probably not very healthy. And I think once we got through the pandemic, everybody was doing it. You know, there were still people on my vacation walking around in masks. It's 50 degrees. I mean, there's no way there's, you know, germs with your dirty mask. I mean, I don't know when you see people like that, you're just like, oh my God. But those are things that are still lingering. And I think they're a drag on, you know, advancement. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I think it depends. I mean, I think it is fantastic that there is a flexibility. You know, also at my age, there's kind of what we call this sandwich generation, where we have people my age who have to deal with childcare, but they also have to deal with their aging parents, right? And so care is going both ways. And so having flexibility doesn't mean that you're sitting on the floor with your kid at 10 a.m. while you're taking a Zoom call, right? It means like maybe you have flexibility for pickup and drop off and, you know, other kinds of things. But I think being in the office is incredibly helpful. I would also say for our younger people, that is an invaluable experience. If you can have an office experience, I think it's very helpful, not just for being seen, but for developing the social skills that exist within a workplace.
Well, my son asked me to pick out an old folks home in advance, and he wants access to my Uber account so they can take me there. And I'm like, you know, this is a lot to process.
Yeah, it's you know, I think having the conversations is really important. I think, you know, you don't want to have it too early.
Yeah. So here's some things that I wrote down too. So you've covered the skilled labor, and then so does the apprenticeship, does that work directly with companies, or is that something that you guys are doing and then go, hey, go out and get a job because you did this XYZ?
Yeah, again, I mean, our office is really more of strategic and then evaluation, and the evaluation feeds the strategy. So it's a bit of a loop. So when we have resources, we're funding something that is directed by the data that we're seeing. And the data that we're seeing is that our economic development organizations have done a great job in helping companies here grow, attracting new companies, but we need people who are going to very literally build the economy that we've developed. So you talked about a previous guest that did, you know, HVAC. That is something that we're seeing. So we do need skilled workers, and this administration has done a lot to invest in skilled workers. We do that primarily through directly investing in registered apprenticeship programs. So registered apprenticeship programs are something that you do in partnership with the state, which basically means it's an earn-to-learn program, which, again, is really helpful for people who have children or have responsibilities. You're actually getting paid while you are working. It is the employer that is making an investment in their future workforce. And when we talk about things that are highly skilled, like electricians, things like that, employers really have that incentive to invest in those workers from the very beginning, because you're not going to be an electrician in 3 weeks. I think the danger now is we're seeing more people are interested in the skilled trades, and you have a lot of programs that aren't registered that are telling you can be a skilled electrician in 6 weeks or whatever. And like, that's not a real thing. And I certainly wouldn't want an electrician in my house who's only been training for 6 weeks. So those are the programs in which we're investing. Some of them are, you know, very much trade shops, you know, like your electrical kind of brotherhood type of organizations. And then some of them are companies directly. Like, we've invested in Sunk Construction. They have a registered apprenticeship program. All of them are great opportunities. People can go to our website and learn more. Build It AZ. .coms to learn more about the registered apprenticeship programs that are available. They can sign up, and we share their information with the employers or the organizations that are doing the training.
Well, I've been, you know, my father was in the diesel engine business. I mean, this goes back to the 70s, and Cummins had apprenticeship. So mm-hmm. people got put in that, and it was a 2-year gig. So you were working and getting paid, but you were working with a certified Cummins tech, and there was people fist fighting to get into that stuff, and that kind of went away for a while because we decided that everybody needed to go to college or whatever, and that's why the trades, you're aging out more people into trades now that are coming in. That's the big problem. The guy, the electrician and stuff, and that's why if anybody wants to know what a big driver of inflation is I'm paying more every year. Mm-hmm. When I first started recruiting, $12 to $15 an hour. Now, I tell people any job, if it doesn't, the bottom is 20, people won't even look at it. Or you just get these transient people that come through temp services and things like that, and that's not what the people want. But I'm like, you got to pay. You can't. Mm-hmm. This is my favorite one. Get me a rock star. And I just start absolutely cringing because it doesn't exist at $20 an hour.
Yeah. I think it depends, right? I mean, it is difficult. If you want a rock star, you have to pay for a rock star. And, we are seeing waiting lists for the skilled trades. They are rigorous programs though, right? It's not like you come in and everyone makes it through to graduation. That's just not how it works. They're tough jobs. You also, you got to be smart. You got to be able to do math. So there are a lot of things that go into the skilled trades rather than being physically strong and capable. One of the things that are great opportunities is we look at broadening the labor pool is I think sometimes, especially with the skilled trades, it's, this person works for me and now their brother's heard about me or their nephew or niece or whomever. What we want to do is also just broaden the workforce pool. So we do a lot of marketing through our Build It program. We also do it with Ready Tech Go as our advanced manufacturing program. So we're using digital media to get in front of people who are looking at career changes, people who are justice impacted, right? So I think oftentimes companies don't want to make the effort to hire people who have been previously incarcerated, but they have, really great rates of retention and loyalty to companies. So I think companies also need to think broader than whatever the well is that they've been currently going for occupations. And I know you're very good about kind of picking your head up and seeing more than wherever a company has been going before.
Yeah, the problem with when you do recruiting full time is there's about every 2 weeks you get to the pissed off point where you hear the same crap every day. People are late, they blow off appointments, then they try to reschedule. And I'm a big guy for if you can't keep an appointment, then I can't expect you. Tom from Air2O said the same thing. You can't get here at 6 o'clock, we can't work with you. And you only get three times.
Yeah.
And that's a 90-day probationary period. They wear a different uniform. And then when they make the 90-day, they call everybody out and they give you your, blue uniform or whatever color it is and all, whatever you're with your name and all that, and they make a huge deal out of it. And I think that's something things people don't do. That's a very inexpensive thing to do, and people get, jacked up mm-hmm. over it.
Yeah. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's tough. There are people who just need to be able to do the basics to get a job. I think a lot of times the folks that we see through what we call one-stop Arizona at Work, one-stop centers, are people with significant barriers to employment, right? The people who have just not been able to keep appointments, the people who have food insecurity, the people who have a lot of things going on to be able to meet their basic needs, and employment is yet another thing that can be extremely difficult. But we ultimately know that the best thing that we can do for anyone for economic security is get them employment.
Yeah, that's usually the ticket to getting out of the basement. Working in the nonprofit for 3 years, I got a pretty good view of what they call the homeless population, or whatever the proper word for it is now. But a lot of the people that you can only reach are about 20 to 30% that just fell below there for a while. And if you catch them quick enough, then you can get them out. But the person that's been, hanging out in the street for 2 or 3 years because they can't test sober or whatever, they're almost institutionalized. So I kind of figured that out. You run into people that, you know, they were married to a wife beater, you know, they just moved here overnight and they had a good job. Those are people that definitely can get work. But it's a sad to see that on a regular basis. I was down at the campus for 7 months, and it's a sad thing to watch. And you can see it just doesn't, I don't know if there's enough money to fix it, because some of these people just don't want to. They like living on the street. So
yeah, we have, I mean, government has very limited resources. And so I think, you know, we try to be smart about allocating our resources that go to, and also, like, so many of our resources come from the federal government, right? And so it's very prescriptive in terms of how those resources can be divided. I think we also know that one of the best things that we can do from an ROI standpoint is invest in education and try to drive up our third grade reading levels and eighth grade math and all of those things that we know will produce outcomes to help mitigate some of the things that we see later on in life, where it is much more difficult when people have kind of ingrained habits or they've had life things happen to them that have made it very difficult to overcome their barriers to employment or, you know, being in society in the same way as others. So, yeah, it's being coming from the nonprofit side and being in the government side, and, you know, originally being in the for-profit sector, it's been, government has such an ability to make an impact. And I know people have different feelings about government, but from my perspective, I am proud to get up every day and be surrounded by people who have really chosen a life of public service, of wanting to understand how government can benefit and improve people's lives. But as we've talked about, I am an optimist, and I do not feel like you can work in government or work in nonprofits or be a public servant or have servant leadership in any way unless you are an optimist.
Well, in your position, I think for me, I can be more and less of an optimist, but I go through a stage, you know, where I think, and one of the things everybody's, you know, they're all worried about this AI is taking my job, and they're going to be using, and they're starting to use that as an excuse not to get work. And that's the bad idea, too. We don't start early enough. My theory on, you know, after I did 10,000 interviews with people was, we need to do this at grade school. You need to introduce these concepts. Maybe have more career days where the dude that does air conditioning and stuff like that comes in there. So you can kind of figure that out. Oh, you know, I'm good with my hands. You know, plumbers in town, you know, a good plumber's making 150. If he's on three or four trucks, he's probably making 250. And that's nothing to sneeze at. That's the guy that's got the huge boat and all the toys and all that stuff every weekend. He's at Lake Powell or whatever it is. So it's totally doable. And I've just don't know why people haven't, till now they've just started to notice the shortage. But by the time you notice it, now you're in a big shortage.
Yeah, no, and we have, you know, a shortage of skilled workers. I think we've done a great job of increasing the number of registered apprentices. And so I think, you know, a registered apprentice is definitely a skilled worker because they've gone through that type of program. But there are not enough resources for the training. And then again, you know, we need resources for what's going to get people into jobs. This idea that I'm working two jobs and I have a child at home to take care of, you know, and to be able to put that person into a training program, they are going to need support. And they are going to need services that are not just paying for the training. And so I think we have to really look at workforce holistically. I also work in, you know, working for the state, we work in a lot of rural communities. And rural communities are very unique in terms of their challenges. Arizona's rural communities, the cost of housing and the lack of housing is significant. And so, you know, I don't know the last time you've been up north and you've asked your server, like, oh, do you live around here, right? I mean, there are people who are driving great distances for their jobs in some of these places because they just do not have the housing to meet the needs of the workforce. And that is a challenge as well. And so getting people into training programs, making sure that people have the right skills for the economy that we're seeing today, those are all things we need to do. But unless we also look at this program from a big picture lens of transportation, housing, and childcare, we're going to have a difficult time meeting the future needs of the economy.
Yeah, and I can tell you, I've working with schools and doing some reading on my own and not using AI, I think the schools are behind. I mean, I think they're 3 years behind at least on some of the stuff that they're teaching. If you do a class where people can do the homework with AI, then you got to change your methods. One of my methods is I do a lot of stuff in class. So you have to do speaking, stuff from the Toastmasters manual and things like that. So there's no way to cheat on that. Now, you can make yourself a note card and stuff. That's fine. That's what it's supposed to be for. The one thing I will say about GCU is they tell us to embrace this situation and teach the way to use it as a resource. And the kids always laugh at me because I said, you know, if you wanted to find out about a company, you had to walk across the snow at NAU and go to the library. Well, it don't open till 9, but maybe I need the information earlier. So you've got everything at your fingertips, and you're not using it correctly. So that's kind of where I think school is, and I've talked to tons of people that are in school, and they're not getting some of the things that they really need. A lot of the finance terms and stuff you do. So they're, again, every class should have, or every degree should have, a year of like personal investment, you know, tax, how do you do taxes, basic stuff. Hire a guy, you know, that's another thing. And I don't think we do that. And they don't do it a lot in high school either.
Yeah, I think, you know, personal finance is really challenging. I mean, I worked at Morgan Stanley, and so the people I was helping were people who definitely could afford, yeah. who could afford help. And, you know, I will say there are great places like Junior Achievement that spend a lot of their time and resources helping students understand not just basic personal finance, but also investment finance. You know, they do kind of the stock activities. But it is something that, you know, absolutely. There's also an organization that is specifically for children and kind of economics. The name's escaping me. But there are great out-of-school programs. I don't know. I mean, I also get torn because I feel like there is so much of all of us telling schools what they need to do. The universities I've seen, I mean, you speak to GCU. I know that our public universities are not sticking their heads in the sand about AI. I know they're being very thoughtful. I think at the K-12 level, it really, we see differences, especially public to private, right? Or charter, where, you know, there's just a varying degree of, some schools are very much like, we are going to make it age appropriate and kind of scale you up in terms of your use. And then some schools, I think, are just like, we don't want you using it at all. And so I think it's something that parents need to ask and have their own perspective on. I also know that there are a lot of students right now who are in university that are very anti-AI. And I don't know if they feel like it's maybe more personal to them because of where the job market is and what they're walking into and the uncertainty associated, that maybe they have particular feelings about it. But, you know, it is here. It is a tool. I think it can be very helpful. I do not think that you are going to see the U.S. turn into a place where just 25% of the jobs are gone. I just don't think that's going to happen. I think we're going to see increases in productivity, and we'll see new and different kinds of jobs, and we'll be doing work differently.
And we've blown through a ton of time. Okay. But is there any anything I missed that I asked you that you know is something good that people might want to know about?
No, I mean, I think one of the things that I would say is that there are lots of resources and support. Arizona at Work is a great system. There are great nonprofits where you can get resources to help with resumes instead of just putting it in an AI machine. Recruiters are actually a great place to ask for help and support if you're trying to find a job and you're willing to do the work. You know, I would just say that it's great to Google things on the internet, but talking to real people about employment is a fantastic idea.
Well, Mary, it was great having you. I appreciate you. You know, I asked you, and I'm glad you came.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
This is Mike Hayes with The Hiring Confessional. If you haven't reached out to a friend you haven't talked to for a while, make that point to do that today. You'll be surprised how enjoyable it is.